Not a con.
Simple standards-based slideshow system, which takes a single XHTML document and turns it into a slideshow in your web browser. And I'm going to look at where that came from and some of the design decisions I made and where it's possibly going in the future. It sounds like I'm louder now. Did I come through? Okay. So let me just start off with I hate PowerPoint. Not because it's from Microsoft, I just hate PowerPoint. And I thought I was the only one because I kept seeing PowerPoint everywhere. That we'll get to the rest of that story later on. At one point I was doing slideshows as a series of HTML documents. Basically, you know, here's a page. Every slide was a separate document, and then you clicked on a link to go to the next slide. Okay, that works. But then Opera, back in the, whenever it was, Opera 5 or 6 or something, came up with this thing called Opera Show. Actually, it might have even been before that, where you could have, this was something that had always been implicit in CSS2, where you could have a single XHTML document, and then using the page break properties in CSS2, you could define the boundaries between slides in a projection medium style sheet. One of the media value types in CSS2 is projection. So in a sufficiently advanced system, you could, for example, have a screen media style sheet that presented the document on a little podium screen, and then a projection media style sheet that styled the document differently as it was being projected, in theory. That's actually never happened, and I kind of wish it had, because then the presenter could have the outline view, and then everyone else could see the slides. Anyway, but what Opera does, if you put it into the full screen view, where's my mouse? Here it is. It would apply a projection medium style sheet. Now you can see that this particular projection medium style sheet is not in the greatest shape. But this is exactly the same document I had before. And to switch between slides, I just hit page down, page up. This is page down to go forward and page up to go backwards. Okay, so that's great. I can just have this one document and a few style sheets, and I can put it up on the web where people can see it in outline view, or if they have Opera, they can flip it into Opera Show mode and get it as a slideshow. That's pretty neat. Well, of course, as you can see, if you wrote your style sheets under one version of Opera and then Opera changes its rendering, you run into problems like this. I assure you, when I presented this talk originally back in 2003, it didn't look like that. The other thing, of course, is that you're exchanging one proprietary solution, one lock-in solution, if you will, PowerPoint, for another, not quite so locked in, but still fairly locked in solution. The XHTML document, of course, I could put up for anyone to see. But the slideshow is only visible in Opera. Right. Okay, so maybe that's okay because it's still based on XHTML, and Opera is this scrappy little Norwegian startup, and it's all cool with the karma, and I'm, you know, not bowing to the Breadman behemoth and whatever, if you want to go to that level. And if you don't, then that's fine too. So here's the problem that I ran into. Opera 7.5 came out for the Mac. This is 7.54, but in Opera 7.5, you can see I haven't paid for my copy of Opera, right? And in 7.5, the banner ad stayed when you went to slideshow view. You put up your slideshow and there was this big banner ad across the top of it. That's not gonna work. Now it turns out that was a bug. But it was a bug that it was a problem. Until they fixed it, I couldn't use Opera Show for my presentations. I didn't really want to go back to PowerPoint. Well, at about that time, Tantek Celik, who wrote most of the rendering engine for Internet Explorer 5 for the Macintosh, he's now at Technorati, This is a copy of one of his presentations. He was doing something that was a more cross-browser friendly, and it uses also one XHTML document with some CSS to lay out the document. And you switch between slides by clicking on one of these little buttons here in the footer, okay? So you can go back and forth, and that's all really cool. And the way that works, I have a modified version of it here, is basically the CSS at runtime lays out all of the slides on top of each other and then hides all of them. And then there's a little bit of JavaScript that just displays whichever slide you're supposed to be on. That's how it works. The whole thing. Really smart. But also, you know, I mean, you look at it and it's also kind of it's fairly limited. If you want to go to slide, you either have to click on those, or if you know how to invoke access keys, you can do that. Of course, I can never remember from one platform to the next how to invoke access keys. But this is one of his presentations. You can see it's XHTML, and he's got the namespace because he's Tontec, and he does everything correctly, and so on. And then here's the style sheet, okay? Which in here, where did the dot slide go? Div dot slide, which is every single one of these slides is surrounded by a div with a class of slide. He has visibility hidden that hides them all. And then the way he has it set up, slide one is set to visibility visible, so that makes the first slide appear. And then in the JavaScript, here's his JavaScript, and this is it. Basically says, we're starting at slide one. The maximum number of slides is 6. If the go function is fired, you know, increment or decrement, depending on which direction you're going, what our current slide number is. And if you get to one of the ends, wrap around to the other end. So that was it. And if you look at the markup, I mean, the markup's, it's very simple markup. The same kind of markup that you would see in an Opera Show presentation. The difference being that in Opera Show, you could say something like H2 page break before. And so before every H2, which hopefully you had every slide title as an H2, it would stick in a page break, which meant a slide boundary. In Tontec's case, he wrapped each slide in a div, gave it a class of slide, and then ID'd each one, S1, S2, S3, whatever. And then inside that is just XHTML, which he styled. And that was great. I actually used this for a couple of conferences because, you know, Opera Show had this banner bug, and I needed something. Fortunately, he was doing this. But I quickly came up against some problems, the first of which was all of the IDs are in here explicitly. They're baked into the structure. Well, I rearrange my slideshows a lot when I'm working on them. I insert slides and I think, oh, I should illustrate this point more. And then I realize that I went on too long with a point, so I get rid of a slide and I swap order around. And I was continually having to reorder my IDs, and it was just driving me up a wall. So I started to think about it. And actually, here's an example actually of a talk I gave last year at Nauticon using Tontec slideshow. This is the document, except I gave it my own theme, basically. But that's an example of the getting friendly with XHTML, which I did last year. But I started to think about it, and I realized, well, you know, we already need the JavaScript to make slides appear and disappear. And why don't I just at runtime go through the document structure, and every div that has a class of slide, I'll dynamically assign it the ID that I want. So rather than having the slide numbers baked into the structure, I'll assign them dynamically. And that way, I don't have to worry about what order they're in. You know, I can rearrange the slides like I always do. And then when I load up a presentation, boom, there it is. It's ready, you know, it's ready to go. It'll handle all that numbering for me. And so I did that. And I thought to myself, well, gosh, if I'm already walking the document structure and I'm already picking up where these slides are, I could build myself a little like pop-up menu that would let me jump from slide to slide sort of arbitrarily. And I could do that kind of thing, and that might be handy. So this is the theme, actually, that I had written to go with context setup. But this is sort of what ended up happening. Let me bring this down. Now, you'll notice that there's already a problem, perhaps, but we'll get there. So this, this was built dynamically, pretty much. Let me grab my notes while I'm at it. So this was just built basically. Once I hit a slide, I would go in and grab the first heading, assume that was the slide title, and numbered them up and threw it all in an option list and added some more JavaScript so that if I said, yeah, I want to go straight to the S5 default file structure, it would go straight to the S5, you know, like that. Now, at this point, I was feeling kind of, ooh, gosh, I programmed JavaScript, yay me. You have to understand, I don't do that a lot. It's been a long time since I did anything where I would think of myself as being a programmer. In fact, Turbo Pascal 4.5, rock the house, yeah. I was really good with that. Anyway, that was, back in the dark ages, otherwise known as the early 1990s. Late 80s, early 90s. So I was feeling pretty good about that. And I figured, I did this, and it's interesting, and there are a few people out there who might be interested in it. And I'll toss it up on MireWeb in my tools directory, and I'll announce it. 12 other people in the entire world will ever care. And I could probably name them all. They'd be people like Jeffrey Zeldman and Dave Shea and Doug Bowman and Dan Cederholm and people who are doing presentations like mine about standards who would want to do the presentation and say, and look, it's all based on standards, and they would be the only right. So I was wrong. There were a lot of people who thought this was really cool, and they started contributing stuff. So at some point, somebody said, yeah, that's really cool that you got the jump menu and all that, and I like the menu, I like the little buttons, and you've got the access keys, and that's great, but it'd be even better if you could do something like hit the space bar and advance a slide, or click on a slide and advance a slide, or things like that. And I was like, yeah, that'd be great. How do I do that again? Because I don't know the JavaScript. And so they would contribute code, and they would point me to examples. The original, the code in here, the one that handles the, go up or down or whatever using various keys, was, it's based on MozPoint, which is a Mozilla-based PowerPoint type thing where they had this sort of keyboard handling. Although the way that MozPoint worked is it took a document and then split it up so that you had one page per slide again. Which I was, by this point, I was to the point of, well, if it's not all in one document, I don't really care. And then at some point I decided, hey, let's add a thing so that if you hit the T key, or if you hit this little button here, it'll toggle back to the outline view so that you can see it in outline view and kind of go through it when you're reviewing it, and then flip it back to the slideshow view. And gosh, that, why not? So I did all that, and it went back and forth, and basically this is at this point it had become the perfect example of, I had the need that I needed to address, and so I addressed it, and then discovered, rather to my surprise, that a lot of other people either had the same need or were interested enough in the solution to decide that they had the same need, which was kind of odd. In a way. But see, I hadn't realized how the world had changed since I'd left college. Apparently, professors present using PowerPoint now, like all the time. I didn't know that. When I left college, nobody used PowerPoint because when I left, when I say left, when I graduated from college, I'm trying to remember. Windows 3.1 was the version of Windows that was the most recent, 3.11 or whatever. That's when I graduated. So, professors did radical things like, you know, write on a chalkboard and consult notes and talk to the students, and you know, all that sort of. I don't know. I guess that's out of favor now. But anyway. So it turns out that lots of professors are using PowerPoint because what for whatever reason. Maybe the business school is responsible. I have no idea. But anyway, people started writing me. They're like, Daryl, this is great. I'm going to use this for my class. I was like, what do you mean for your class? Anyway, so I found out. I took it to, at that point, I took it to what we could call version 1.0. That was version 1.0. I shouldn't have gotten rid of that. Which also had things in it like you can't really see it because of the color values, but there's a 4/11 here. That's the you are on slide X of Y indication. So it's telling you this is you're on this slide number out of this many total slides. Not counting the title slide. I actually count the title slide, slide zero, and I don't put it in that total just because that's how I am. I had been thinking about doing this, and then Steve Champion, who I mentioned in my 10 o'clock talk, actually he and Nick Fink had Digital Web Magazine had put together their own slideshow system apparently at some point. And Nick emailed me and said, wow, that's just like the thing Steve and I did. And I said, wow, you and Steve did a thing? I didn't know that. But I went in and I looked at it and discovered it had this X of Y thing. So I stole their code and gave them credit, basically. And then he emailed them and said, thanks, I stole your code. Now, there were some changes on the back end here. Originally, I had just taken Tontex markup and had used that because it made sense. I mean, you know, div class equals slide. I mean, how much more do you really need at that point than div class equals slide? And if you go down and you look, I mean, it looks very much like what Tontek was doing. You know, div class equals slide. It's just I'm missing that explicit ID because the JavaScript's doing it dynamically. You know, however much I might hate PowerPoint, apparently I can't, at this point anyway, I wasn't able to break myself out of the every slide must have bullet points the way of thinking. But, I mean, you know, look, it's an unordered list, and each list item is a list, you know, it's very, very straightforward. And you can write it in BBEdit, which is pretty much my acid test for any good technology at this stage. Well, any good web technology, excuse me, at this stage. So. As it turned out, this div class equals slide is also how the Opera Show format version 1.0 is set up. Mark Schenck, in conjunction with Opera, had written down effectively a specification for a slideshow format. So that by having this slideshow format that people could use, then people could write editors to write Opera Show presentations. And then it was all, you know, they were basically agreeing on a format for slideshows. Well, the markup Tontek had used and that I was using was basically 90% compatible with the Opera Show format. I believe by happenstance, because having talked with Tontek, I don't think he looked at all it. I don't think he knew that Opera Show format existed, actually, until sometime after S5 had come out. Some changes that I had to make, though. I was originally doing all of my slide titles as H2s. The Opera Show format said H1s. And I discussed it with Mark Schenck for a while, and then eventually I decided, all right, I want to be OSF 1.0 compatible. So I'm going to go with the H1s for the titles. And we could get into this whole thing about, you know, the semantics of multiple H1s versus only one H1 and have the H2s. And I don't really want to go there because I don't care that much. This works, and it's great. But that drove some other considerations, such as in the Opera Show format, all of the slides are wrapped in a div with a class of presentation. And then before that, there's a div with a class of layout that has, you can put in layout stuff. So I use those. And that's where I stuck things like the div for the current slide indicator. All the content's dynamically inserted by the JavaScript into this current slide, but I needed to have the structural hook. So I created it here. The same thing, well, the header, I don't put anything in the header for this particular format, but I could. Here's the footer. And then a lot of the stuff up here, a lot of this meta information like generator, version, pres date, author, and company, those were all just taken from the Opera Show format. They already had these things defined, and I didn't have any reason not to put them in, basically, and I had every reason to put them in order to be OSF 1.0 compatible, so I did. Now, this is really what makes S5 work right here. You have links to the slides, the CSS for the slides, and then, well, you have a link for the slide CSS, and then there's a link to opera.css. The system is set up so that if you're using Opera, it will fall back to Opera Show. Okay, it won't try to impose S5, basically. S5 has, and has browser detects, because it kind of has to, for this. It looks to see, hey, am I being run in Opera? And if the answer is yes, then it brings in this opera.css, which is an Opera Show, where's the, there it is, media equals projection, is an Opera Show style sheet. It has things like div.slide, page break before, always, which sets up the slide barriers. And the JavaScript just basically, once it did what the JavaScript, the root function basically says, is this Opera? Great, I'm done. I'm not going to run any other code. No more JavaScript. I'm just stepping out. Whereas if it isn't Opera, then it keeps going. And then there's a, I have a print style sheet in here as well, so that if you print out the document, you get the outline view with a few extra bits. Okay. So at that point, you know, fabulous. That's great. You know, for what it is. I mean, if you want a presentation system and you want to do it in this kind of a setup, that's nice. But as you can see here, it does have a few limitations. For example, if you happen to author your style sheet assuming 1024 by 768, and you get an 800 by 600, your content starts to get cut off because there's no font scaling, basically. And there isn't an easy way to get to it because this is all driven using positioning. Now, you know, at the time I put out S5, I was like, this is still a DIY system, people. Know the CSS, because if you have to change the font size, you're going to have to know where to go into the CSS to change the value of font size for the body element. Okay. Yeah. Considering that originally I had assumed that anyone who ever used it would know CSS about as well as I did and would understand all, you know, I mean, that was, like I said, I mean, originally I was like, yeah, Zeldman and those guys, they'll use a Molly Holschlag, she'll think it's great, you know. Eventually, Dave Weiner will explain why it sucks and, you know, I'll have arrived. So, you know, then all these people were emailing me and they're like, is there any way, what happens if a slide is too long or if the resolution changes, all the stuff gets cut off? I was like, yeah, I know. You people weren't supposed to be using that. I didn't know. I mean, sure, you could scale, you could zoom the font in your browser. And there's, I mean, you could do that regardless. But, you know, how many people know that that function exists? Not enough, in my opinion. So, I mean, I had set all this up, and then, you know, there are worse things to happen to your project than to discover it's popular, but there are also better things to happen in terms of having free time. So, a lot of this stuff. There was some stuff in the JavaScript that was contributed by users that really, I mean, this wouldn't have been possible, honestly, without what they contributed. A good example is, here's where we set up some of the browser detects. And actually, if we jump down into the end of the JavaScript, I mean, basically, if not if I'm not Opera, do all this other stuff. But if I, you know, if I'm Opera, if it's Opera, basically, well, if you're not Opera, create the controls. No matter who you are, label all the slides, which is where it adds all the IDs dynamically. And then if you're not Opera, do all this other stuff. And all that other stuff is what sets up basically the system. But here's a function that someone contributed called isParentOrSelf, which was kind of important because what was discovered during the beta process was that if you weren't careful, basically, while trying to select this option here, you could advance the slide. Because basically, there was an on-click event that was listening for clicks. And so you would click, and it would say, ooh, the mouse is down. Advanced slides. Like, no, that's not, you know. And things like that would happen where you would maybe click on one of these, and it would double advance. Because it would pick up the click, and then it would pick up the, hey, something advanced here. You know, things like that. So isParentOrSelf was set up so that I could say, okay, if a parent of the thing that I clicked on is a certain element, then don't try to advance the slide. You know, stuff like that, which eventually became sort of these generic classes, well, not classes, excuse me, functions, along with get elements with class name, which is something that actually a colleague and I wrote back in my days at Netscape. Not that we're the only ones who ever did it, of course. I mean, plenty of people have written this function or functions like it. But these sorts of things started to build up at the top of the script as just handy things to have. You know, function is class, which was a way of saying, hey, does this element have this particular class? And if so, do X, otherwise do Y. You know, which was great. I mean, the community involvement really helped. But what also helped was, in my experience, providing this kind of information, a diagram of the file structure. I wrote a primer, a very basic primer on creating your own S5 file. Basically, it's, you know, you don't have, not how to do a theme, but how to structure the content. So that it said, okay, every slide is in a div with a class of slide, and then you can put whatever you want in there, but you know, bear in mind that if you have too much stuff, it's going to go off the bottom. And those sorts of things. Also, a complete structural reference that explained what every single possible element in the entire file structure could do. And it also indicated where things were OSF 1.0 compatible. And those were really important because rather than someone having to reverse engineer what I had written and what users had contributed, they could just look at these references and get a good starting point. And it actually helped a couple of people already have written what are effectively S5 creators. They're slideshow creators that are just available online where you can use markdown syntax or a very simple syntax to, you know, just you set your bullet points as asterisk, space, and then content, and then asterisk, and you know, that sort of syntax. And then, you know, you click the turn it into a presentation for me button and the system turns it into an S5 presentation. Which is really nice. So you know, this sort of thing where it describes what each of these files is for, you know, things like S5 core.css, which has a comment at the top that says, you know, mess with this and the sky will fall on your head kind of thing. It's not exactly what it says. I actually got that from WordPress, but something like that. It's like, don't touch these unless you absolutely know what you're doing, and then if it breaks, don't cry. Or at least not to me. Any questions about how we got to where we were at this stage? No? I've either put them to sleep or they're just along for the ride. Okay. So at that point, because there was interest in it, I actually decided, oh, it's going to have a version 1.1. So here's an example of version 1.1 with a different theme called I18N. map of the world. Some of you got that joke, that's fine. Which, I mean, the markup structure hasn't changed really, except there are a couple of additions I'll talk about in a minute. Other than that, I mean, it operates basically the same, but there are quite a few additions, and we're up to version 1.1 beta 5, and we should have gone to 1.1 final a while ago, but circumstances prevented that. One of the I think most important things is that it does have at least crude font scaling. When you resize the window, let's find the slides.js. The JavaScript you'll notice has gotten quite a bit longer. Well, maybe that wasn't obvious from before, but trust me, it's gotten quite a bit longer. And we ended up registering window on resize, fire the font scale function after a timeout of 50 seconds. I think I'll wait 50 seconds to resize that. Yeah, I don't think so. As I say, it's very crude at the moment. I just sort of assume that you want 32 pixel text at 1024 by 768 and base all of the scaling calculations off of that. Not the smartest approach necessarily, but it's how it goes. There's the possibility, as I say in the comment here, I'm thinking about having the JavaScript look into the theme CSS, see what the font size was set to there in the CSS, assume that that was meant for 1024 by 768 and scale from there. A little less crude, but not by much. Because I'm still making this assumption of 1024 by 768 as the target authoring, the target resolution, which has been true for many years, but you might start, because this projector, for example, I think it starts at 1024 by 768 and goes up from there. But that's, how the font scaling gets managed. I also, in version 1.0, there was an assumption that slides were effectively atomic. Not like Atomic Betty, but atomic as in every slide was just, that was it. When you advance to the next slide, you got the whole slide, and then all you could do was leave that slide. In one of the early betas for 1.1, added with some help incremental display, which can be useful. You can either do it with the first thing showing by default or else not. Okay, so what drives that is actually, on the code side, it's a little complicated. On the markup side, it's pretty simple. And that's one of the driving goals in all of this. Here we go. So here's one of those incremental lists. Classed incremental, and in this case, also classed show first. Okay, so any unordered list that has a class of incremental, the JavaScript goes in and marks all of the list items that are children of that list as you should incrementally display this. So instead of having to mark every single one of the list items class equals incremental, you can just do it at the top level. In theory, actually, you could do it up here at the slide level to make everything incremental. I haven't actually done that yet, so it'd be interesting. But the show first just means show the first bullet point by default and increment from there. Whereas if you just say incremental, when the slide comes up, none of the bullet points appear, and then when you hit the next spacebar function, the first time that first bullet point shows up. Now, you don't have to do it that way. You can class individual things as incremental. As an example, I have a slide that has a number of images where they're all classed incremental, so that they show up one at a time. There's actually, and there's another one. So I'm not scaling images yet. That's, again, if I'm going to scale them, I'm going to have to start with an assumed resolution, and I guess 1024 by 760, but I don't know how much I like that idea. But you'll notice here in this theme, I'm using PNGs. I'm using translucent PNGs to get that sort of effect there. People who are familiar with web design will no doubt know that Internet Explorer for Windows, while it will display PNGs, will not honor their alpha channels. But in one of the, I think it was version, I think it was beta 3, but it was one of the middle betas, added in a behavior file that forces IE to deal with alpha channels in PNGs. And that's brought in through the JavaScript. Here's that example of incremental images. And you can actually, I mean, with this, you can do what's effectively crude animation. You can't make things swoosh across the screen, which to some degree I'd regard as a design bonus. But you can't. But you can have things appear a step at a time. Back them, and you can unspool them and bring them forward again, all under the user's control. So this, again, basically I came up with the structures that would be needed, and with some help from members of the, you know, people who read MireWeb, got help with the JavaScript that would, you know, dig in and assign the classes where they needed to be. And it's still OSF 1.0 compatible. Added some other stuff, like if you mark a link as being external using rel equals external, like this one, it will spawn a new window if you click on it. So when you're doing a presentation and you want to, now I don't have network access, so it's not going to find it, but you can see it spawned a new window to go to Derek Featherstone's example. And there's better slide handling. Other things that users contributed was things like if I type 8 and hit return, it'll jump to slide 8. And if I type, if I type 5 and hit the space bar, it'll skip forward 5 slides. And those were things that users contributed again. And a late addition was one of the things that I had to do was make it so that mouse clicks, if a mouse click happened within the context of either an embed element or an object element, S5 would ignore it, because otherwise when you clicked on an embedded movie to try to pause it, you would get advanced to slide. So that was another case where is parent or self was really helpful, because I could say, you know, hey, are you or any of your ancestors objects? Yes? Fine. Okay, I'll ignore that mouse click. So you've got all that fun stuff. One of the other changes that I made was at the markup level, and that was to add these configuration parameters. You can change the default view between slideshow and outline. This was done once I realized how many professors were trying to use this for their classes. So they could do the slideshow in class, if that was what they really wanted to do, and then change the default view to outline, put it up on the website, and then, right, sorry. It would just stay in outline view on the class server. So the student could come and actually look, instead of having to go through a slideshow or think that they had to go through a slideshow, they could just go through the outline. And then if they wanted to see it as a slideshow, no problem. Just toggle over to the slideshow view. The other one is the control visibility, whether or not you want it hidden by default. You can set it up so that I think it's visible as the other. Oh, whoops. I need to put that back to slideshow. So by default, the controls can appear like the little button controls, and then stay there, basically. So if you as the author want that. Now, these are the defaults. The defaults are slideshow and hidden, because that's what I like. So that's what I define as the defaults. The reason that I put these in the markup, actually into the markup, is that these are what I regard as effectively runtime parameters that the author of this of the presentation is going to want to set. You know, let's say an author wants their controls to always be visible on their particular slideshow, and they want to that particular slideshow to default to the outline view. I could either do that in the markup, or I could do it in some embedded JavaScript that then the rest of the JavaScript would pick up. And this, frankly, seemed much easier to document, because anyone who's writing one of these presentations is probably going to know XHTML. Otherwise, you're not going to be writing one of these presentations. But they might not know JavaScript. There are plenty of people who write web pages who don't know JavaScript. And many of them may, in fact, be professors. Not to denigrate them, as you know, I only know JavaScript because if I didn't know it, I couldn't have done something like this, basically. So the advantage for me was, you know, this is something that, as a presentation author, I'm going to want to be able to control. Because my only other option besides that, or embedding these parameters into the JavaScript in the document, was to have some lines in the actual external JavaScript that had to be edited, in which case, if you wanted to run multiple presentations off of that same UI directory, then they would all be forced to the same setting, which you might not want. Because the way the file structure is set up, because this is a beta, the UI directory is actually called v11b5, but this is usually a UI directory. You could have an arbitrary number of presentations at this level here, all sharing the same UI directory. Which, again, although I didn't intend it for this purpose originally, it turns out to be great for a professor who's putting up presentation outlines, presentation slideshows on a server. That's really nice, because they can just have all their presentations in one directory, and they all share the same user interface scripts and style sheets, rather than having to have, for every presentation, a whole new copy of the user interface stuff, which they're probably never going to change. But just in case they do want to, that would be really useful. Now, there are a couple of bugs still, and if anyone has any insight, I'd love to talk to you about them. Number one, Safari in Outline View ignores page up and page down. I have no idea why. I restructured the entire key and click handling so that in Outline View, the only keystroke that S5 ever pays attention to is the T key to toggle back to the slideshow view. Other than that, it lets everything pass through to the browser, and yet I can't do page up and page down in Safari. If anyone's encountered something like that before, please, God, let me know. The other one is, and it only seems to happen with this theme, at least at the moment, is Firefox for Windows, not for the Mac, but for Windows. The footer has sort of this nervous twitch. When you rescale the font, it like kind of moves up and down for a minute. And it's really annoying, and I can't figure out what it is. And I thought at first, oh, geez, I think what it's doing is, when you resize the window, it's rescaling the font, and then it's interpreting that as a window resize, so it's rescaling the font again, and it has rounding errors. That's actually not it. It's only calling the font scaling routine once, so that means it's not reloading the window. So I don't know what it's doing. Again, if anyone has any insight, I'd love to hear them, because I'm stumped. I've been working on that for a while. But this is, I mean, it's still Opera Show Format 1.0 compatible. I did make a few changes, you know, so that people who download this and look at it, they say, ooh, controls, that sounds cool. No, please don't touch this, because the JavaScript takes this, you know, takes the element with the ID of controls and overwrites the contents. So anything that a user puts in here, in either of these elements right here, is just going to get overwritten by what the JavaScript does. So I thought I'd throw in a warning or two. But other than that, I mean, it's still basically the same markup. And actually, one of the features I forgot to mention before that's sort of stealthy, yes, I know you can't find the server. I'm not on the network. I got it. Is that if I bring back the address bar, you can use fragment identifiers. Of course, it's not going to work now because the Dark Angel of Demos have visited. You can use fragment identifiers to bookmark a specific slide. Curse you. Maybe I have to have a zero. I forget. Nope, it's just not going to work. Well, it worked yesterday, so. That's always the joy, isn't it? But that was also user contributed. I mean, there was quite a bit. I mean, I did quite a bit of work on this. There was also quite a bit that was user contributed, either from users suggesting, hey, I'd like this feature that I had never thought of because, you know, for whatever reason, or users saying, hey, I would like this feature and here's some code that does it. The type a slide number and go straight to it was an example. Actually, I had several people suggest that. The person whose code I used was the person who had commented it clearly so that I understood it. Because I wasn't about to just take somebody's JavaScript and drop it into my script without understanding it, because then more and more I would not understand what I was working on. Well, he provided me something that let me understand how it worked. And I was able to go from there. So looking forward sort of to the future, this is a test document I've been working on. I'd like to do some basic slide transitions. This is one I've been working on, just because the kids seem to love this. I don't know. You can see I'm not quite there yet, because this is great until it gets to the end and then it blanks. I had something wrong somewhere, I don't know. I threw these together while I was actually sitting in an airport, so I don't feel so bad. But yeah, the wipe at least works. And maybe iris effects, I don't know. It's just people ask for these things occasionally. And so the way I would probably set them up, the way I would invoke these is, again, through the through the class names. A slide that the user wanted to transition to through a wipe would literally have div class equals wipe, and, or maybe wipe LTR for left to right versus RTL for right to left, or you know, top to bottom, bottom to whatever. I haven't figured that out quite yet, but that's you know, I haven't figured out the exact values, but that is the approach that I will end up using, is use those class values, because it's just the easiest place to do it. Something else, which is I'd like to have images scale along with fonts, if I can figure out how to do that in a sensible way. And the major pie in the sky thing I have at the moment is a pluggable framework. Doesn't that sound cool? I'd just like to have one of those. Actually, it's been suggested a couple of times. The reason to have a pluggable framework, buzzword, is so that if you set up a pluggable framework, however it is one does that, then people could create their own like little effects modules, like wipes and fades and this kind of stuff that I've been working on, and then it would just all plug in magically. I don't know how, because remember, I don't really know JavaScript that well. I mean, I know it better than I used to, but I'm not by any means a JavaScript wizard. And people have pointed me to examples. There's a JavaScript sort of an image slideshow that will fade from one image to another, and it'll do this resize and stuff, and it's all a pluggable framework. And they're like, oh yeah, go look at that. That's exactly how you do it. And I open up the JavaScript, I don't understand any of it. It's like doing stuff I've never seen before. And it's not that it's like dense and compact. It's commented to hell and gone. I just don't get it. So, you know, maybe one day. But that's sort of where we're going with it. But it was weird at South by Southwest this year, South by Southwest Interactive, like half the presenters were using S5, which I just never, I was like, yeah, I'll use it, and oh, Tontek will use it, and then he'll hack the hell out of it, and it'll be better than it ever was, because he's just that kind of guy. No. Actually, it was Simpson Garfinkel who told me, he said, have you considered this and this and this? I was like, no, I never considered those things. I didn't expect it to be popular. And he wrote back and he said, you missed two things. One, it's a cool technology demo, and two, never underestimate the depth of hatred that people have for PowerPoint. Okay. So I thought it was just me. I didn't know it was a thing, and with the professors, and anyway. So that's sort of where we went and the kind of design decisions that happened. I think I have time for a question or two before Froggy comes up here and kicks my ass off the stage. So in the back. That's an excellent question. Where it's available is meyerweb.com, which is my personal website. In the top, I'm not on the network, so I can't show you, but the top toolbar, the top nav bar, there's a toolbox link. It's in there along with other stuff that I've done, like Color Blender and that sort of deal. The license currently is Creative Commons by SA 2.0. It's an attribution share alike 2.0. I very likely will change that. I've been leaning towards expat, but I might do the BSD 3-term license. But either way, it's going to be something like that. And the license only applies to the system. It never applies to the content. The actual content can be licensed under whatever the author chooses to license it under. But the system, at the moment, as I say, is Creative Commons. But I did that and then had a bunch of people say, yeah, Creative Commons is not so good for software. And I said, this isn't software. It's just markup and JavaScript and CSS. And that's not software. They're like, it's software. Yeah. Get it licensed somehow else. So I was like, all right, fine. I haven't decided because I don't want to change the license now because it's just too much effort. So I never want to have to do it again. So I'm sort of vacillating about what the best choice would be. And expat I like because it's real short. But then I mentioned expat, and all the BSD people are like, use BSD, you moron. So I don't know. Any other questions? Are you just still waiting for Froggy and Tiger? Yeah. You guys are up next, aren't you?
I'm up next.
Oh, you're up next. My
wife is not feeling well right now.
Oh.
It's
going to
be
the
one-man road show.
Okay. Any last-minute quick questions, anyone? All right, well, I'm going to hang around for a bit. I'm going to watch his thing, actually. So thank you all very much for your attention. I appreciate it.